Radiotopia.
Welcome to the Kitchen Sisters present.
From PRX.
We're the Kitchen Sisters, Davia Nelson
and Nikki Silva.
Hi, I'm excited to tell you that one of our favorite Radiotopia siblings, Ear Hustle, is back with a new season. Ear Hustle is a show about life in prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast. Co-hosts Nigel Poor and Erlon Woods have recently been spending time at four California prisons and have a season's worth of funny, surprising, and unforgettable stories to share. In a recent episode, they were able to visit a groundbreaking prison hospice where they spoke to men who are grappling with the reality of dying inside prison. Also coming up this season are stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells, complicated mom-daughter relationships in prison, and incarcerated people who wonder whether they've become too comfortable behind bars. Stories about life on the inside told by those who live it. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts. The Kitchen Sisters Present is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Davey and I got started in radio, doing a live show at KUSP in Santa Cruz, California. It was an eclectic, all-over-the-map show. Live interviews, music, rare recordings. We were always on the hunt. Early on, we found seven boxes of old 78 recordings in my father's garage. It was a treasure trove. Ella Mae Morris, Duke Ellington, Hoagy Carmichael. About a third of the way through one of the boxes, we pulled out a heavy black disc and a manila record sleeve. Handwritten on the label, it said, "To Louie, love, Mrs. B." And on the other side, it said, "Louie, darling, play this side first."
"Hello, Louie. This is your wife again. To start off, honey, I want to tell you I love you very much. This week I've received no mail from you yet, but I was a lucky gal last week. I got seven. Today I also got a letter from Emil. And it's P.S. he said, we ski in 43. I sure hope so. See, Lou, I hope so, too. Let's see, what can I tell you about? Oh, listen, you. Stay out of those pubs and away from those barmaids. Tell me some more about what you're doing. And you don't tell me very much in your letters. How's the dancers, Pop? Do they jitterbug there, honey? I bet they don't dance as nice as we do, though, and I bet they're not half as pretty. Are they, hon? Maybe I'll sing a song for you, too, honey. Won't that be swell? Well, I guess this is about all I can think to talk about for now. Except that I love you. Do you have to? I have to tell you that? And I'm waiting for you to come home, honey. This is for you, Louie.
I haven't seen a sunny day ever since he went away. Wonder when my baby's coming home.
Who was Mrs. B, this woman, talking on a record in 1942 to her husband Louie overseas? My dad had no idea. We searched for years and never found her. But her record set us on a quest. We became obsessed. In the 1930s and 40s, there were these portable record-making machines. People could buy blank discs and actually record onto a record. These discs were out there. Audio time capsules hidden away in people's attics and stereo consoles, in the record bins at Goodwill, forgotten. Years later, when we produced the Lost and Found Sound series with Jay Allison on NPR, we opened up the phone lines and asked people to tell us about their home recordings. Today's story comes from this archive of lost voices.
9 was received at 5:40 p.m. Friday.
Hello, my name is Henry Cordova. I'm calling about an old record that I have in my possession, a recording of my grandfather's voice. My grandfather was a professional orator, a reader elector, as they call them. He read to the cigar workers in Tampa, Florida, while they hand-rolled cigars.
On Friday, January 29th, Henry Cordova was listening to All Things Considered on Miami's WLRN as he drove home from work. I'm Jay Allison, curator of The Quest for Sound, and on that broadcast, I asked people to call in with stories of their home recordings of the last 100 years.
Hello, Blanche, Frank.
Henry did.
Oye, esta es Marina, como dices tú. Oye, Blanche.
That's his grandmother, Marina.
Written on the label, saludos de Mateo, saludos de Marina.
Inspired by Henry's message, producers Davia Nelson and Nikki Silva, the Kitchen Sisters, began to explore the cigar culture of Southern Florida, drawing on the legacy of audio artifacts, oral histories, and memories of this lost tradition of story and smoke.
Listen, friend, I would like to see you again very soon.
Our narrator is actor Andy Garcia.
Cigar Stories. El lector, he who reads.
My grandfather came to Key West, got a job as a reader in the cigar factories. The Cuban cigar industry had moved to Key West to escape political troubles in Cuba during the Spanish-American War. Later went to the Spanish part of Tampa called Ybor City, which was named after Martinez Ybor, a Cuban tobacco mogul. The height of the industry, there were about 100 cigar factories, each employing several hundred people. So there was a lot of market for professional readers. And if a man had a good voice and a good selection of material, he would get fans and he'd be in high demand.
The lectors began in Sevilla. In order for a worker to sit there and roll a cigar, which is really a monotonous task, something had to be done to entertain them. They brought on a man to read. When you finish making a cigar, you put the wrapper on it. It's really a delicate thing that makes or breaks a cigar. And the glue that the women in Sevilla used was the sweat of their thighs. It's very hot in the factories, and they were sweaty. When the leaf came to the final wrapping, they would rub it on the inside of their thigh. That would cause it to stick.
I went to work when I was 15. It was 1924, Tampa.
Cigar roller, Eugenia Preve.
I made 150 cigars a day. When the summer came, we were hot. We sweated like pigs. I worked by hand for at least 30 years. And we had an hour and a half in the morning of lecture. They talked of everything that happened in the world. Whenever there was a good article anywhere, they would come and read it to us.
The Agüero Sisters by Cristina Garcia. My father, as the lector of El Cid Cigar Manufacturers Company, was revered for his intellect and his splendid renditions of the works of Cervantes, Dickens, and Victor Hugo. For 2 hours every morning and then again after lunch, Papa read aloud from an assortment of newspapers, novels, political treatises, and collections of poetry. While the workers occasionally voted on what they wanted my father to read, more often than not, they left the choice to him, a testament to their utmost confidence in his taste. For 21 years, Papa stood in his lectern and read to workers seated below him. Most of them smoked continuously as they listened to him, stripping, sorting, and rolling the finest tobacco in the world.
My father came to Tampa to visit his uncle,
Henry Aparicio. His father, Manuel Aparicio, was a legendary lector in Ybor City.
He saw this man in this platform reading the newspaper, and the whole factory was quiet. And he asked, how much that fella makes? He said, well, Manuel, they made it a lot of money, and they spent a lot of money. He was known as the prince of the factory. The reader is not an employee of the company. In fact, the company does not like the readers because the readers educated the worker.
Lector Manuel Aparicio.
Sangre Romagnola por Carlos Diallo, esclava de un sillón, en vida muerta.
Many of the readers, Victoriano Mantega, Ramon Valdespino, Ramon Rubiera, these were leaders during the Cuban Revolution of the 19th century. They fought labor wars in Florida. It was more than simply having a great voice. It was also being a leader in the community.
Gary Mormino teaches history at the University of South Florida at Tampa.
There's a great deal of debate about the origins of the reading, that it began in a prison. An enlightened warden thought that a reading from Victor Hugo would be more redemptive than a flogging. Others believe it began at cigar factories in the 1850s in Cuba.
The factory is silent.
They waited till everybody was sitting down and all the work materials had been passed out, the tobacco leaf, and then they ascended the podium.
Dr. Ferdy Pacheco paints and writes about lectures in Ybor City. He was Muhammad Ali's fight doctor for 17 years.
Now, each factory was different. Most of them built with 2x4s, a raised platform.
In some factories, such as the Partagas factory in Havana, or the VM Ybor factory in Tampa, Florida, there might be elaborately carved rostrums resembling church podiums. In other places, called buckeyes or chinchales, you simply sat on a chair.
He started at 10 o'clock and read for 2 hours. Then he goes to lunch and come back and read for 2 more hours, 4 hours a day.
Por eso perece el parlamentarismo. Por la hipertrofia de los partidos, sufrimiento.
In the morning, they read the local news, Prensa Obrera, La Gaceta. And they had a Cuban política cómica. And we paid for it. We paid 25 cents a week.
The reader would select items that might interest the workers. An earthquake in Spain, a peasant rebellion in Sicily. Translating the news into Spanish.
Every lector in every factory spoke Spanish, usually very pure Spanish. No matter what he says, you like to listen to him. He was, you know, it's like listening to Orson Welles or Jose Ferre. They speak so beautifully, I don't care what they say.
He had to use his voice to carry 500 people. Now, no microphone and no air condition, windows open, and 500 people making cigars. You have to be completely silent.
You're talking about a hall with 200 people with their head down working, all sitting elbow to elbow, eight across, row after row after row, with the normal noise that attends making a cigar. It was a lot of snipping and sniping where you're hitting the chaveta with a desk.
La chaveta. It's like a square knife and a sharp edge in the bottom, and they cut the edge of the cigars with it. Usually at the end of the program, they're banging in the table like this. It means great, like applause. They hit the chavetas when they were displaced too.
The reader would read from a work by Karl Marx, Henry George, Leo Tolstoy, Bakunin, Kropotkin, famous progressive thinkers of the 19th century and early 20th century. This was probably the most controversial hour. The workers fought for this hour. Samuel Gompers, one of the founders of the American Federation of Labor, his first job was as a cigar maker. He was a reader reading Yiddish in a cigar factory in New York City.
In the sultry air.
After lunch, the lector would then pick a novel. Well, the women... Remember, this is before radio and television. Didn't want to just go home with their children and take a nap. They wanted to hear the novel. So they would spread out their blankets and stuff right under the window, and he would then read so that outside you could hear what the novel was about as well as inside. So he entertained the wives as well as the men.
Papa had a deep voice, cured to huskiness over the years by the sheer volume of smoke he inhaled. Although he nursed his throat regularly with honey and lemon, he refused to yield to the temptations of the microphone, which, he was convinced, distorted the robust timbre of his voice. Lector Manuel Aparicio.
Eres tú, Federico, por la cuenta, le dijo al fin. No vuelves con el día, porque la noche...
The one thing that my father had was he could change his voice.
Henry Aparicio.
He would read... soap operas. He could transform his voice from an old lady to a young lady to a man to a baby.
que son las obras de este mundo para mi larga.
Cigar makers voted on the novel to be read. Jules Verne was very popular, Cervantes. Shakespeare was translated into Spanish and in Yiddish.
Ferdy Pacheco.
Two men disagreed so violently because one had gotten married and didn't want his wife to listen to an Emile Zola book, which he felt would have sexual descriptions. And they started arguing back and forth and ended up bringing guns to where they ate the 4th of July cafe. The Spaniard shot the Mexican four times. The Mexican shot the Spaniard once. He went in the kitchen, got a big knife, and plunged it into the heart of the Mexican, thereby reaching some height of literary criticism.
Somewhere, someone is watching a rerun of I Love Lucy. Between 1880 and 1930, somewhere a cigar maker was listening to Don Quixote.
Professor Gary Mormino.
Some cigar makers told me that in a lifetime they probably listened to Don Quixote a dozen times.
Miguel de Cervantes, Don Quixote de la Mancha. Capítulo 6. De lo que pasó a Don Quixote con su sobrina y con su ama.
An Italian immigrant told me his sister worked at the cigar factory in Ybor City. Every night at the conclusion of dinner, the father would give up his seat to allow his daughter to tell the family what had happened to Sancho Panza and Don Quixote that day.
Ybor City.
Ybor City really was the mother of Tampa. It became a boomtown, like a gold rush in California. We had people come from all over, mostly Cubans, and then the Spaniards, then Italians, and usually came from New Orleans, and then Germans.
Tampa, at its peak in the 1920s, there were probably 150 cigar factories rolling hundreds of millions of hand-rolled cigars a year. At any one time in Ybor City, there may have been several hundred readers. Tampa, for decades, was called Cigar City.
These people that came here were cultural people, city people. They were used to theaters, and they were used to cafes, they were used to the nightlife. Here, you didn't have nothing but alligators and snakes, so they built their own hospital. They imported their own doctors.
We had socialized medicine since I remember. We came and we worked. And we had this, the Centro Siriano, we had the hospital, we had our clubs. We never depended on the government for anything.
The social clubs, Los Centros.
They paid so much a week to belong to the club. The Cuban club, the Italian club, the German club. At that time, the worker, some of them were black, could not integrate themselves because of the law at that time. They had to have their own club, so they had Mati Maceo.
On a Saturday night, thousands would crowd into these clubhouses listening to bands, but also listening to opera. When Caruso came to town, the great opera stars, they came to Ybor City.
There used to be big dances, New Year's, El baile de carnaval, el baile de las flores, el baile de Halloween, the big dances that we had at the centros.
Angela Fernandez is a historical guide in Ybor City.
And then at New Year's, you were at the Centro Asturiano, but you had to go to the Centro Español, and you went over here, you know, to greet all your friends. It was so nice. I'm so sorry it's not here now.
The social clubs and the cafes were packed with men arguing at all times. A guy that rolled a cigar could have equal weight intellectually with a guy that wrote for the newspapers because they were so well educated by the lectors.
I organized the morning's reading. Two local newspapers, a movie magazine, the latest newsletter from the International Cigar Workers Union, and Papa's favorite recipe for Galician-style scallop pie, which called for a special type of scallion grown only in Spain. My father had taken to sharing his culinary expertise with the cigar rollers, who greatly appreciated his cooking tips. Once, when Papa had tried to demonstrate how to prepare the perfect torta alla española on a portable burner, the director stopped him in mid-lesson for creating a fire hazard. A banner reading "No cooking on the premises" still hung, frayed and yellowed with smoke, in the back of the hall. The strikes.
A successful businessman automatically smoked a fine hand-rolled Cuban cigar at this time. But the Great Depression really put the brakes on the cigar industry. People started smoking cigarettes. In all the great strikes in Tampa, the reader was at the center. The reader became a lightning rod for controversy, a scapegoat in times of political turmoil.
The lectors had been instrumental in opening up the factories to the unions. The Spanish landlords would not permit unions. Here's a man, day in, day out. He gives you information on political decisions to be made. He shows you how you, in the United States, are in charge. It's called a vote. By this continuous harping on Jeffersonian democracy, he changed the lives of this mass of workers. Nowhere that occurred in a labor movement in the United States. Sure didn't happen in the coal mine, and it didn't happen when they put Chinese to building a railroad, and it didn't happen when they're starting to hunt whales in New England. The union said, if they throw out the lectors, we walk. They walked out, and it took 10 months.
We didn't get a salary. We didn't get anything.
Eugenia Breve.
There were so many people going hungry. My sister-in-law, her mother had eight, and some days they just went to bed with black coffee and hot bread. But she didn't break the strike.
When the owners finally had enough, they said, I tell you what, whoever comes to the factory can have their job back. And if you don't come, I will send to Cuba and to Key West and to Spain, and I'll get a whole load of cigar workers. No problem. And that broke the strike. They had to feed their family.
And in 1931, both the Tampa political officials as well as the cigar manufacturers wanted the reader removed, figuring if you remove the source of conflict, prosperity would return. And they brought in carpenters to dismantle these elaborate tribunes. Many of the workers told me they'd cried at seeing the rostrums torn away.
The cigar rollers roll on.
Precisely at the moment machines are replacing cigar makers, the radio replaces the reader.
Radio came in, and the machines came in, and that killed the reader, because they can't compete with machines clanking, clanking, clanking all day.
By the late 30s and 40s, cigar makers are listening to the World Series in Spanish in Tampa.
I know my grandfather, when the machines came, quit and went to New York City and got into broadcasting.
Quest for sound caller, Henry Cordova.
He knew that there was a large Hispanic community in New York City. The movies were being made up there. He got a job dubbing silent films. He also worked at a Spanish language radio station in Tampa, Florida, where he did the news and did an Advice to the Lovelorn column.
Latin Melodies, presented by the makers of the famous Valentine product. Your master of ceremonies this morning again, then your Manuel Aparicio.
I have a picture where my father is reading to the WDAE. Mike.
Muy buenos días, tengan todos ustedes, mis queridos radioyentes.
Radio is free. You turn the switch on and it's in the air. Well, how can you charge? My father, he said, from now on, the soap operas, anybody can listen to it, but if you like a novel, vote for it. Now, the only one that can vote was the one that paid.
Whenever I got back to Tampa, I would make it a point to go to one of the Chinchalitos, which is one of the little handmade cigar places, and buy a box. And I could always con the old timer that hand rolled them, because I would say, I'm the Mexican's grandson. That was my grandfather's nickname, El Mexicano. Actually, he was El Mexicanito. The Mexicano was his father, who was also a lector. There was almost no topic that I could bring up that he didn't know something about. He was a sort of a man that women liked and that men respected. He came from a time when the classics were very important, where an educated man was expected to know different things than they are today. Lector. He who reads.
Cigar Stories was produced in collaboration with Jay Allison, Laura Folger, and Tina Pacheco. Mixed by Jim McKee. Special thanks to Frank Figueroa, Andy Garcia, Art Silverman, Guillermo Cabrera Infante, National Baseball Hall of Fame, Ybor City Museum, Archival Audio Restoration WGBH Boston, and Brian McCabe at WUSF Tampa. You've been listening to The Kitchen Sisters Present, produced by The Kitchen Sisters with Nathan Dalton and Brandy Howell.
The Kitchen Sisters Present is part of Radiotopia from PRX, a curated network of extraordinary cutting-edge podcasts created by independent producers.
Radiotopia from PRX is made possible with support from the Knight Foundation, and thanks to AdZerk for providing their ad-serving platform to Radiotopia.
If you are interested in supporting this and other podcasts like it, email sponsor@prx.org.
Thanks for listening.
Radiotopia from PRX.